Welcome to the cemetery. I'm former gravedigger Nathan Barnett from spooky old New England, and you're listening to Grave Stories. Hi, I'm sitting here in my closet in Los Angeles, sweating. I'm like sweating pretty bad. 102 degrees today. All the doors are closed. There's no oxygen in here, but this is optimal for recording. This is when it sounds the best. No echo. Lots of soft things in here. The less air, the better it sounds, I guess. Less wind flow. So today, everyone, we are going to have a shift. We are changing things up for October. We're going to read some not real stories, because the other ones are all absolutely true. We all know this. And I don't want to say, I don't want to say that and make people think, oh, is he being sarcastic? No. Look the books up. They're great books. They're real life true accounts. I love real stuff. Real stories told from real people saying what the heck's really going on in this world. Exposing the ghosts. Exposing the other dimensions and the powers that are unknown to us. That's the stuff I like. I don't really care for fictitious spooky stories, which is actually a lie, because there are movies I like. I like that movie, The Others. That's on my mind because I mentioned it last time. I mentioned it last week. I do like some spooky movies, but that's a movie. Reading stories, I don't really care to read spooky stories because I'm not scared because I know this is fake. I'm more scared when I'm like, oh my gosh, this actually happened to someone. Oh, I got a bubble in my throat. My throat's haunted. So this week, I'm going to, for the next 4 weeks, if you guys like it, unless you guys absolutely hate it and you're like, no, go back to the real stuff, then I will. But I'm going to do today, we're going to have a guest on here, my friend Tom and roommate, my friend from high school, Tom, who also has a podcast called Unbelievable Mysteries. I've been on it a bunch. My brother Seth has been on it. He talks about real life unsolved mysteries, basically. He does the podcast version of the show we all love. He researches a topic, talks about it, has a guest on, they discuss it, he gives you all these facts and about what happened. It's pretty interesting. He did one of the first ones I was on was this DB Cooper, if you guys ever heard of him. He likes the only unsolved plane jacking, and like the guy like jumped out of a plane and no one ever found him and never found his body or anything, no trace of him. So that's pretty interesting and cool. And then he did another one I was on, which one was, I was reading to this one. These two twins, were they twins the second time around? Either way, these two kids, a brother and sister, died. And then the parents had two more kids, and they were basically the exact same kids. The next kids had the same memories from those kids. The parents never told them any of this, these things. The kids just knew where everything was in the town. They acted exactly like the other kids. They had the same scars on them. It's really crazy. You guys should listen to that one. So it's something about something twins. That was a good one. He like researched it and read it to me, and I just sit there and listen, react. So Tom from Unbelievable Mysteries, check it out if you haven't. He is going to be a guest. He's going to do a segment on here where he's going to read a creepypasta. And then I'll read a creepypasta, but I like to call them spooky spaghettis. So I'm going to read a spooky spaghetti. The only one I've ever read, actually, when I did this on YouTube years ago as a live stream, I would just, you know, read all these stories in this huge creepypasta audience that would like watch these live streams. And they always wanted me to read a creepypasta. And I was like, I don't want to. But then someone said, read this one. It's really good. So I read this one. I can't remember the name of it. It's about an 8-foot-tall woman. It's a Japanese creepypasta. When I have it in front of me, I'll remember the name. It's like Hachisaka Shumara or something. And I think people also call it like Po-Po-Po for short. But I'll read it to you. You guys will hear it. It's really good, and it is scary, and it freaks me out when I think about it happening to me in real life as I'm reading it. So I'm going to read that, and then Tom, I don't even know what his is, but we'll hear it. His is a popular one too, I think, or like a fan fave. So we'll see how this episode goes. If you guys aren't into it, hey, I'll jump ship. I'll go back to the cemetery and read the real spooky stuff, but give it a chance, see what you think, because I'm telling you, the one that I'm reading is awesome and it's really scary. So thanks for listening. Let's go to our sponsored break and then we'll get right into it.
The Halloween Hall of Fame will continue after these messages. The Halloween experts at Magic Manor have everything you'll need this year, including actual character masks from famous motion pictures. And they can show you the proper application of makeup to impress that special someone. Magic Manor's professional hand-painted custom masks start as low as $250. This Halloween, remember Magic Manor. Wigs, masks, makeup, costumes, shockingly authentic. Magic Manor, East Wind Mall.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening to that ad that paid me $0. Hopefully it paid you 100 joys. I like the ads, but I don't have real ads, so I survive on Patreon support. So if you guys like this podcast and you're able to support, the Patreon link is everywhere in the world. Nathan Barnett, Patreon. I think it's in the bottom of this podcast. Thanks for all the ones who do support. Thanks for being in my private Discord and chatting with me about spooky stuff and sending me all your stories. All right, now we're going to get into Tom's. Tom's reading a creepypasta called The Russian Sleep Experiment. And I recognize the image of this one. I think it's like a well-used image. It's all over the internet. It's like a skeletal-looking guy with a huge head and sunken eyes and big teeth in black and white sitting on a bed. It's a very creepy image. And it's apparently from this story of the Russian Sleep Experiment. Let's see how it goes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tinfoil Tom, and Nathan Barnett has asked me to read you a little creepypasta this evening. I hope no matter where you are, you're ready to be scared as we tell the terrifying creepypasta, The Russian Sleep Experiment. Russian researchers in the late 1940s kept five people awake for 15 days using an experimental gas-based stimulant. They were kept in a sealed environment to carefully monitor their oxygen intake so the gas didn't kill them, since it was toxic in high concentrations. This was before closed-circuit cameras, so they only had microphones and 5-inch thick glass porthole-sized windows into the chamber to monitor them. The chamber was stocked with books, cots to sleep on, but no bedding, running water and toilet, and enough dried food to last all five for over a month. The test subjects were political prisoners deemed enemy of the state during World War II. Everything was fine for the first 5 days. The subjects hardly complained, having been promised, falsely, that they would be freed if they submitted to the test and did not sleep for 30 days. Their conversations and activities were monitored, and it was noted that they continued to talk about increasingly traumatic incidents in their past, and the general tone of their conversations took on a darker aspect after the 4-day mark. After 5 days, they started to complain about the circumstances and events that led them to where they were, and started to demonstrate severe paranoia. Hey, reading is hard, guys. They stopped talking to each other and began alternately whispering to the microphones and one-way mirrored portholes. Oddly, they all seemed to think they could win the trust of the experimenters by turning over their comrades, the other subjects in captivity with them. At first, the researchers suspected this was an effect of the gas itself. After 9 days, the first of them started screaming. He ran the length of the chamber, repeatedly yelling at the top of his lungs for 3 hours straight. He continued attempting to scream, but was only able to produce occasional squeaks. The researchers postulated that he had physically torn his vocal cords. The most surprising thing about this behavior is how the other captives reacted to it, or rather, didn't react to it. They continued whispering to the microphones until the second of the captives started to scream. The two non-screaming captives took the books apart, smeared page after page with their own feces, oh my gosh, that's disgusting, and pasted them calmly over the glass portholes. Ew! The screaming promptly stopped. So did the whispering to the microphones. Wow, that's really gross. After 3 more days passed, the researchers checked the microphones hourly to make sure they were working, since they thought it was impossible that no sound could be coming with five people inside. The oxygen consumption in the chamber indicated that all five must still be alive. In fact, it was the amount of oxygen five people would consume at a very heavy level of strenuous exercise. On the morning of the 14th day, the researchers did something they said they would not do to get a reaction from the captives. They used the intercom inside the chamber, hoping to provoke any response from the captives they were afraid were either dead or vegetables. They announced, quote, "We are opening the chamber to test the microphones. Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor. You will be shot. Compliance will earn one of you your immediate freedom." To their surprise, they heard a single phrase in a calm voice response. Quote, "We no longer want to be freed." Debate broke out among the researchers and the military forces funding the research. Unable to provoke any more response using the intercom, it was finally decided to open the chamber at midnight on the 15th day. The chamber was flushed of the stimulant gas and filled with fresh air, and immediately voices from the microphones began to object. Three different voices began begging, as if pleading for the life of loved ones to turn the gas back on. The chamber was opened, and soldiers sent in to retrieve the test subjects. They began to scream louder than ever, and so did the soldiers when they saw what was inside. Four of the five subjects were still alive, although no one could rightly call the state that any of them in life. The food rations past day five had not so much as been touched. There were chunks of meat from dead test subjects' thighs and chests stuffed into the drain in the center of the chamber, blocking the drain and allowing 4 inches of water to accumulate on the floor. Precisely how much of the water on the floor was actually blood was never determined. All four surviving test subjects also had large portions of muscle and skin torn away from their bodies. The destruction of flesh and exposed bone on their fingertips indicated that the wounds were inflicted by hand, not with teeth, as the researchers initially had thought. Closer examination of the position and angles of the wounds indicated that most, if not all, of them were self-inflicted. The abdominal organs below the ribcage of all four test subjects had been removed, while the heart, lungs, and diaphragm remained in place. The skin and most of the muscles attached to the ribs had been ripped off, exposing the lungs through the rib cage. All the blood vessels and organs remained intact. They had just been taken out and laid on the floor, fanning out around the eviscerated but still living bodies of the subjects. The digestive tract of all four could be seen working, digesting food. It quickly became apparent that what they were digesting was their own flesh. Oh my gosh, that had been ripped off and eaten over the course of days. Wow, this is messed up. Most of the soldiers were Russian special operatives at the facility, but still refused to return to the chamber to remove the test subjects. They continued to scream to be left in the chamber and alternately begged and demanded that the gas be turned back on, lest they fall asleep. To everyone's surprise, the test subjects put up a fierce fight in the process of being removed from the chamber. One of the Russian soldiers died from having his throat ripped out. Another was gravely injured by having his testicles ripped off. Oh my gosh. And an artery in his leg severed by one of the subjects' teeth. Another five of the soldiers lost their lives, if you count ones that committed suicide in the weeks following the incident. Wow, this is messed up. In the struggle, one of the four living subjects had his spleen ruptured, and he bled out almost immediately. The medical researchers attempted to sedate him, but this proved impossible. He was injected with more than 10 times the human dose of a morphine derivative and still fought like a cornered animal, breaking the ribs and arm of one doctor. When heart was seen to beat for a full 2 minutes after he had bled out, to the point there was more air in his vascular system than blood. Even after it stopped, he continued to scream and flail for another 3 minutes, struggling to attack anyone in reach and just repeating the word, "More," over and over, weaker and weaker, until he finally fell silent. The surviving three test subjects were heavily restrained and moved to a medical facility, the two with intact vocal cords continuously begging for the gas, demanding to be kept awake. The most injured of the three was taken to the only surgical operating room that the facility had. In the process of preparing the subject to have his organs placed back within his body, it was found that he was effectively immune to the sedative they had given him to prepare him for the surgery. He fought furiously against his restraints when the anesthetic gas was brought out to put him under. He managed to tear most of the way through a 4-inch wide leather strap on one wrist, even though the weight of a 200-pound soldier holding that wrist as well. It took only a little more anesthetic than normal to put him under, and the instant his eyelids fluttered and closed, his heart stopped. In the autopsy of the test subject that died on the operating table, it was found that his blood had triple the normal level of oxygen. His muscles, that were still attached to his skeleton, were badly torn. He had broken 9 bones in the struggle to not be subdued. Most of them were from the force his own muscles had exerted on them. The second survivor had been the first of the group of 5 to start screaming. His vocal cords destroyed, he was unable to beg or object to surgery, and he only reacted by shaking his head violently in disapproval when the anesthetic gas was brought near him. He shook his head yes when someone suggested, reluctantly, they try the surgery without anesthetic, and did not react for the entire 6-hour procedure of replacing his abdominal organs and attempting to cover them with what remained of his skin. The surgeon presiding stated repeatedly that it should be medically possible for the patient to still be alive. One terrified nurse assisting the surgery stated that she had seen the patient's mouth curl into a smile several times whenever his eyes met hers. Wow, this is like seriously twisted, guys. When the surgery ended, the subject looked at the surgeon and began to wheeze loudly, attempting to talk while struggling. Assuming this must be something of drastic importance, the surgeon had a pen and pad fetched so the patient could write his message. It was simple. Keep cutting. The other two test subjects were given the same surgery, both without anesthetic as well, although they had to be injected with a paralytic for the duration of the operation. The surgeon found it impossible to perform the operation while the patients laughed continuously. Once paralyzed, the subjects could only follow the attending researchers with their eyes. The paralytic cleared their system in an abnormally short amount of time, and they were soon trying to escape their bonds. The moment they could speak, they were again asking for the stimulant gas. The researchers tried asking why they had injured themselves, why they had ripped out their own guts, and why they wanted to be given the gas again. Only one response was given: I must remain awake. All three subjects' restraints were reinforced, and they were placed back into the chamber, awaiting determination as to what should be done with them. The researchers, facing the wrath of their military benefactors for having failed the stated goals of their project, considered euthanizing the surviving subjects. The commanding officer, an ex-KGB, instead saw potential and wanted to see what would happen if they were put back on the gas. The researchers strongly objected, but were overruled. In preparation for being sealed in the chamber again, the subjects were connected to an EEG monitor and had their restraints padded for long-term confinement. To everyone's surprise, all three stopped struggling the moment it was let slip that they were going back on the gas. It was obvious that at this point, all three were putting up a great struggle to stay awake. One of the subjects that could speak was humming loudly and continuously. The mute subject was straining his legs against the leather bonds with all his might, first left, then right, then left again for something to focus on. The remaining subject was holding his head off his pillow, blinking rapidly. Having been the first to be wired for EEG, most of the researchers were monitoring his brain waves in surprise. They were normal most of the time, but sometimes flatlined inexplicably. it looked as if they were repeatedly suffering brain death before returning to normal. As they focused on paper scrolling out of the brainwave monitor, only one nurse saw his eyes slip shut at the same moment his head hit the pillow. His brainwaves immediately changed to that of a deep sleep, then flatlined for the last time as his heart simultaneously stopped. The only remaining subject that could speak started screaming to be sealed in now. His brainwaves showed the same flat lines as one who had just died from falling asleep. The commander gave the order to seal the chamber with both subjects inside as well as three researchers. One of the named three immediately drew his gun and shot the commander point blank between the eyes, then turned the gun on the mute subject and blew his brains out as well. He pointed his gun at the remaining subject, still restrained to a bed, as the remaining members of the medical and research team fled the room. "I won't be locked in here with these things, not with you," he screamed at the man strapped to the table. "What are you?" he demanded. "I must know." The subject smiled. "Have you forgotten so easily?" the subject asked. "We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal haven where we cannot tread." The researcher paused, then aimed at the subject's heart and fired. The EEG flatlined as the subject's weakly choked out, quote, "So nearly free." Wow, that story is a twisted creepypasta, and obviously one of the classics of the creepypasta genre. Thank you again to Nathan Barnett for having me on his podcast. And if you're looking for some unbelievable mysteries, I have a podcast called Unbelievable Mysteries, where I investigate all of the craziest, most unbelievable mysteries of all time. I've been Tinfoil Tom, and I hope you're all enjoying the Halloween season. Bye-bye.
Whether you do a little or a lot, be an original this Halloween and find yourself at Hallmark.
Welcome back, everybody. Wow, what a horrifying story. I honestly don't know if it was scary, because at the point in recording this, I haven't heard it. I haven't listened to Tom's yet. I will edit this, and then I'll be able to tell you if it was good or not. We'll find out. I'm guessing it's probably pretty good, because if he chose it, he likes spooky stuff, it's probably pretty good. Either way, thanks for listening. Now I'm going to get into my choice for a spooky spaghetti. It's got a couple of names here. I mean, really, it has one name. Hachisaku-sama. I try to say it fast, make it sound smoother, but it makes it even harder. Hachisaku-sama. Hachisaku-sama. Hachisaku. Oh my gosh, if you say it so many times, you start to lose your mind. Hachisaku-sama. There we go. And I think that stands for 8 feet tall, because they say 8 feet tall, or Hachisaku-sama. And some people just call it po-po-po, because apparently the noise she makes is po-po-po. Not apparently. I know that. I've read this. But I don't think it's actually po-po-po. It's spelled P-O-P-O-P-O, like P-O dot dot, you know, a bunch of dots, dot dot dot, P-O dot dot dot, P-O dot dot dot. So the noise this person makes, I think it's more of a like that noise you can make with your mouth. I think that's the noise they make. It's like a po type noise. I choose to believe that, because that's scarier to me than someone just standing there going po 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 po. I think is like weirder and creepier. So here we go. I'm going to start reading this spookus spaghetti now. Let's get in the mood. Also, today's the 10th episode, everyone. ADD taking over my brain right now. This is Episode 10. Happy 10th anniversary. 10th week anniversary, Grave Stories Podcast. Thanks for allowing me to do this, internet. Thanks for not kicking me off the internet after 10 weeks. We're still here. You're still listening. Thank you very much. I love it. Hopefully you love listening to it. Okay, so quick edit. After reading a tiny bit of the story, I realize it is saying Poe. I liked it in my head when I remembered it as because that's weird. But I guess it is Poe. They say Poe because it said the voice. Anyways, you'll hear what you'll hear the description of the noise in the story and why I now know it is called said Poe. Here we go. Hachishaku-sama. My grandparents lived in Japan. Every summer, my parents would take me there on holiday to visit them. They lived in a small village and they had a big backyard. I loved to play there during the summer. When we arrived, my grandparents always welcomed me with open arms. I was their only grandchild, so they spoiled me. The last time I saw them was the summer when I was 8 years old. As usual, my parents booked a flight to Japan, and we drove from the airport to my grandparents' house. They were delighted to see me, and they had a lot of little presents to give me. My parents wanted to have some time by themselves, so after a few days, they took a trip to another part of Japan, leaving me in the care of my grandma and grandpa. One day, I was playing out in the backyard. My grandparents were inside the house. It was a hot summer's day, and I lay down on the grass to rest. I stared up at the clouds and enjoyed the feeling of the soft rays of sun and the gentle breeze. Just as I was about to get up, I heard a strange sound. Po, 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 po. I didn't know what it was, and it was hard to figure out where it was coming from. It sounded almost like someone was making the noise themselves, as if they were just saying, po, 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 over and over again in a deep, masculine voice. I was looking around, searching for the source of the noise, when I suddenly noticed something on top of the tall hedges that enclosed the backyard. It was a straw hat. It wasn't resting on the hedge, it was behind it. That's where the sound was coming from. Po, 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 po. Then the hat began to move, as if someone was wearing it. The hat stopped at a small gap in the hedge, and I could see a face peering through. It was a woman. But the hedges were high, almost 8 feet tall. Oh gosh, I just got major chills. There's an image of this lady. Oh my gosh, this is spooky. If you guys are in my Discord, in my Nathan Discord, I'll post the pictures of this lady. There's a picture up top too. Oh my gosh, I'm like looking at her. All right, continuing on. I was surprised at how tall the woman was. I wondered if she was wearing stilts or some sort of huge high-heeled shoes. Then, a split second later, she walked off and the strange noise disappeared with her, fading into the distance. Bewildered, I got up and wandered back into the house. My grandparents were in the kitchen drinking tea. I sat down at the table, and after a while, I told my grandparents what I had seen. They weren't really paying attention to me until I mentioned the distinctive sound. Bo, bo, bo. As soon as I said that, both of them suddenly froze. Grandma's eyes grew wide, and she covered her mouth with her hand. Grandpa's face became very serious, and he grabbed me by the arm. This is very important, he said. And the intense voice, oh my gosh, I'm getting goosebumps. Oh my gosh, it's freaking me out. Oh gosh, their intensity and their urgency is freaking me out. This is very important, he said, in an intense voice. You must tell us exactly how tall she was. I mean, if she's taller than a regular person, then that's it. I don't think the kid's going to know exactly how tall she is. As tall as the garden hedge, I replied, beginning to get scared. My grandfather bombarded me with questions. Where was she standing? When did this happen? What did you do? Did she see you? I tried to answer all of his questions as best I could. He suddenly rushed out of the hallway and made a phone call. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I looked over at my grandma and she was trembling. Grandpa came barging back into the room and spoke to my grandmother. I've got to go out for a while, he said. You stay here with the child. Don't take your eyes off him for a second. What's going on, Grandpa? I cried. He looked at me with a sad expression in his eyes and said, you've been liked by the Hachishaku-sama. With that, he hurried out, got into his truck, and drove off. I turned to my grandmother and cautiously asked, who's Hachishaku-sama? Don't worry, she replied in a shaking voice. Grandpa will do something. There's no need for you to worry. As we sat nervously in the kitchen, waiting for my grandmother to come back, she explained what was happening. She told me there was a dangerous thing that was haunting the area. They called it Hachishaku-sama because of its height. In Japanese, Hachishakazama means 8 feet tall. It takes on the appearance of an extremely tall woman, and it makes a sound like po 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 in a deep male voice. It appears slightly different depending on who sees it. Some say it looks like a haggard old woman in a kimono, and others say it is a girl in a white funeral shroud. One thing that never changes is its height and the sound it makes. A long time ago, it was captured by monks, and they managed to confine it in a ruined building on the outskirts of the village. They trapped it using 4 small religious statues called Jizos that they placed at the north, south, east, and west of the ruins, and it wasn't supposed to be able to move from there. Somehow, it managed to escape. The last time it appeared was 15 years ago. My grandmother said that anyone who saw 8 feet tall was destined to die within a few days. Oh, it all sounded so crazy. I wasn't sure what to believe. When Grandpa came back, there was an old woman with him. She introduced herself as Kei-san and handed me a small crumpled piece of parchment, saying, "Here, take this and hold it." Then she and Grandpa went upstairs to do something. I was left alone in the kitchen with Grandmother again. I needed to go to the toilet. Granny followed me to the bathroom and wouldn't let me shut the door. I was beginning to get really frightened by all this. Yeah, no kidding. This is like a heart attack inducing for some kid. Oh, this is like unnerving. It's just the thing about this story that scares me is because it's all left to the imagination. You only see the lady once and you only hear about the lady once. That's all you need. You just need to know there's a threat, and it's always best when your imagination makes up everything else. Now it's just them freaking out about this thing, and you're like, that's all you need to make be scary. I like stories like this because it's very simple and it allows you to go insane and you're on your own. That's the scariest thing, your own brain. After a while, Grandpa and Kei-san took me upstairs and brought me into my bedroom. The windows were covered in a newspaper, and lots of ancient runes had been written on them. There were small bowls of salt in the 4 corners of the room, and a small Buddha figure placed at the center of the room, on top of a wooden box. There was also a bright blue bucket. "What's the bucket for?" I asked. "That's for your pee and poo," Grandpa replied. Kei-san sat me down in the bed and said, "Soon the sun will be setting, so listen carefully. You must stay in this room until tomorrow morning. You must not come out under any circumstances until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Your grandmother and your grandfather will not speak to you or call you until then. Remember, do not leave the room for any reason until then. I will let your parents know what is going on." Dude, I have so many goosebumps. This is nuts. This kid's just gonna be trapped in this room, waiting for this thing to come get them. Jeez, man. I don't remember what happens in the end of the story. I just remember it was very scary. But it's like, this is made up, but it's making me nervous because you're thinking what it would be like in real life. You put yourself in the shoes every time. That's why The Blair Witch was one of the scariest movies I ever saw, because I imagined myself in that situation, running from someone in the dark, not knowing how close they are behind you because it's pitch black and you're just running. They could be an inch from you. You don't know. That unknowing is what's scaring to me. Oh, boy, so spooky. All right, continuing back. Sorry, I rambled too much. She spoke in such a grave tone that all I could do was quietly nod my head. "You have to follow Kei-san's instructions to the letter," Grandpa told me, "and never let go of the parchment she gave you. And if anything happens, pray to Buddha. And make sure you lock this door when we leave." I mean, what is locking a door going to do for an 8-foot-tall demon lady? I mean, it's funny that, like, these demons, I'm interrupting again, but sorry, these demons obey rules. It's like, "Oh, the door's locked. I'm a magical creature. I escaped this prison you put me in somehow because I'm straight up magical, but I just can't open the door. I'm really bad with locks." This is like insane. They just bust it. It's 8 feet tall, man. They bust this door down. Sorry, I'm ruining the story. Okay, here we go. They walked out into the hallway, and after saying goodbye to them, I closed the bedroom door and locked it. I turned on the TV and tried to watch, but I was so nervous I felt sick to my stomach. Grandma had left some snacks and rice balls for me, but I couldn't eat them. I felt like I was in prison, and I was very depressed and scared. I laid down on the bed and waited. Before I knew it, I was asleep. When I woke up, it was just after 1 a.m. All of a sudden, I realized that something was tapping on the window. Oh, dude, not that. See, that's good. That's classic scary. Oh, and it just starts tapping. Let's see if you guys can hear this. I felt the blood draining from my face. My heart skipped a beat. I desperately tried to calm myself down, telling myself it was just the wind playing tricks on me, or maybe branches of a tree. I turned up the volume of the TV to drown out the tapping noise. Eventually, it stopped altogether. That was when I heard Grandpa calling me. "Are you okay in there?" he asked. "If you're scared, you don't have to stay in there all alone. I can come in and keep you company." I smiled and rushed over to the door, but then stopped in my tracks. Oh gosh, this is freaking me out. I have head-to-toe goosebumps. Oh my gosh. My legs, my thighs, I have goosebumps. My skin's gonna pop off. Holy crap. I had goosebumps. Oh my gosh, the next sentence is I had goosebumps all over my body. That's insane. I do too, kid. I stopped in my tracks. I had goosebumps all over my body. Oh my gosh, that's freaking me out. I'm locked in my closet right now with all the doors closing. All the doors closed. Oh my God. I don't like this. Now I'm afraid to leave here. Oh my, I trapped myself in a room and so did they. We both have goosebumps. What's it mean? Is freaking poo 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 outside my door? Oh, sorry, I gotta keep reading, but I'm really freaking myself out. I had goosebumps all over my body. It sounded like Grandpa's voice, but somehow it was different. I couldn't tell what it was, but I just knew. What are you doing? Grandpa asked. You can open the door now. Oh my God, dude, it's the lady. It's the lady. It's the lady. I glanced to my left, and a chill went down my spine. The salt in the bowls was slowly turning black. What? I backed away from the door. Oh my God, this would be a good movie. My whole body was trembling with fear. I fell to my knees in front of the Buddha statue and clutched a piece of parchment tightly in my hand. I started desperately praying for help. Please save me from Hachishaku-sama, I wailed. Then I heard the voice outside the door saying, Bo, 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 bo. The tapping on the window started up. I was overcome with fear and crouched there in front of the statue, half crying and half praying for the rest of the night. I felt like it would never end, but eventually it was morning. The salt in the four bowls was pitch black. I checked my watch. It was 7:30 a.m. I cautiously opened the door. Grandma and Kaysan were standing outside waiting for me. When she saw my face, Grandma burst into tears. I'm so glad you're still alive, she said. What? That's something the kid wants to hear. Oh, I'm so glad you didn't die. Jeez, lady. I went downstairs and was surprised to see my father and mother sitting in the kitchen. Grandma came in and said, hurry up, we've got to get going. We went to the front door, and there was a large black van waiting in the driveway. Several men from the village were standing around it, pointing at me and whispering, that's the boy. The van was a 9-seater, and they put me in the middle, surrounded by 8 men. Kaysan was in the driver's seat. The man on the left looked down at me and said, you've got yourself in quite a spot of trouble. I know you're probably worried. Just keep your head down and your eyes shut. We can't see it, but you can. Oh my gosh, it's still out there? Don't open your eyes until we've got you safely out there. Well, how'd the kid get in the van? Just skipped over the part how the kid had their eyes open while walking to the van, but now all of a sudden they keep their eyes closed? The story's got a little bit of holes in it. I need some more details here to believe this. Grandpa drove in the front and my dad's car was following behind. When everyone was ready, our little convoy started moving. We were going fairly slow, around 20 kilometers, or maybe less. After a while, Kaysan said, this is where it gets hard, and started muttering a prayer under her breath. That was when I heard the voice. Oh no, I can't listen to it anymore. Po, 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 po. I clutched the parchment Kaysan had given me tightly in my hand. I kept my head down, but I peeked outside. I saw a white dress fluttering in the breeze. No! Why'd you look? It was moving along with the van. It was Hachishaku-sama. She was outside the window, but she was keeping pace with us. Oh my God, that's horrifying. Then suddenly, she bent down and peered into the van. No, I can't even think of that. I can't even think of that. Oh my God, oh my God. Then suddenly, she bent down and peered into the van. No, I gasped. The man beside me shouted, close your eyes. I immediately shut my eyes as hard as I could and tightened my grip on the piece of parchment. Then the tapping began. The voice became louder. Po, 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 po. There was a tapping on the windows all around us. All the men in the van were startled and on edge, muttering nervously to themselves. They couldn't see 8 feet tall, and they couldn't hear her voice, but they could hear the tapping on the windows. Kaysan started praying louder and louder until she was almost shouting. The tension inside the van was unbearable. After a while, the tapping stopped, and the voice disappeared. Kaysan looked back at us and said, I think we're safe now. All of the men around me breathed a sigh of relief. The van pulled over to the side of the road and the men got out. They transferred me into my dad's car. My mother held me close and the tears were running down her cheeks. Grandpa and my father bowed to the men and they went on their way. Kaysan came to the window and asked me to show her the piece of parchment she had given me. When I opened my hand, I saw that it had gone completely black. Ooh, spooky. I think you will be okay now, she said. But just to be sure, hold on to this for a while. She handed me a new piece of parchment. Well, hang on. So, like, what did they do? They just drove away? and the ghost just went away. Like, if the ghost was following them, the ghost would follow them. Now she's just out, now this kid's just out of the car, and the ghost isn't getting them. I don't understand how they defeated it. Let me keep reading. Maybe there's something else happens. After that, we drove straight to the airport, and Grandma saw us safely on the plane. When we took off, my parents breathed a sigh of relief. My father told me he had heard about 8 feet tall before. Years ago, his friend had been liked by her. The boy disappeared and was never seen again. Oh, dang. My father said there were other people who had been liked by her and lived to tell about it. They all had to leave Japan and settle down in foreign countries. They were never able to go back to their homeland. She always chooses children as her victims. They say it's because children are dependent on their parents and the family members. This makes them easier to deceive when she poses as their relatives. He said the men in the van were all blood relatives of mine, and that's why they had been sitting all around me, and why my father and grandpa had been driving in the front and back. It was all done to try and confuse Hachishaku-sama. It took a while to contact everyone and get them all together, so that is why I had to be confined in the room all night. He told me that one of the little Jizo statues, the ones that were meant to keep her trapped, had been broken, and that was how she escaped. It gave me chills. I was glad when we were finally back home. All this happened more than 10 years ago. I haven't seen my grandparents since. I haven't been able to so much as set foot in the country. Afterwards, I would call them every few weeks and talk to them on the phone. Over the years, I tried to convince myself that it was just an urban legend, that everything that happened was just some elaborate prank. But sometimes, I'm not so sure. My grandfather died 2 years ago. When he was sick, he wouldn't allow me to visit him, and he left strict instructions in his will that I wasn't allowed to attend his funeral. It was all very sad. My grandmother called a few days ago. She said that she had been diagnosed with cancer. She missed me terribly and wanted to see me one last time before she died. "Are you sure, Grandma?" I asked. "Is it safe?" "It's been 10 years," she said. "All that happened a long time ago. It's all forgotten. You're all grown up now. I'm sure there won't be a problem." But what about Hachishaku-sama?" I said. For a moment, there was silence on the other end of the phone. Then I heard a deep masculine voice say, "Po, po, 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 po." The end. That's the end of that one. So basically, the ending is this spirit, this ghost, is very determined to get this kid. So 10 years later, it calls the kid and says, "Oh, come see me. I'm sick. I'm your grandmother." And then the kid goes, "Are you sure?" And then the demon says, "Just kidding. It's me. Now you're never going to come because I told you it was me by saying po, po, po." I mean, the ending is so stupid in my opinion. I don't remember the ending being like that. But if I'm thinking like logically, the ghost wouldn't go. I guess we're supposed to go, "Oh, it's creepy because the ghost called on the phone. Ooh," but the ghost freaking blew it for itself by going po, po, po. This ghost is an idiot. Moron. Well, still good. Still spooky. The imagery and the alpha of them is scary. And it's a pretty unique story. I think it's a short story. So I think if it was written out longer or turned into like a script or a movie, it could be really good. And it could be logic could be fixed and like the reasoning and a little more believable. And I don't know. It could be better. But it is good. I remember it. I haven't read it since that last time years ago. And I got freaked out by it. So I like it. This is my only spooky spaghetti that I've ever read. So if you guys like creepy pastas and you have suggestions, that would be good. I know you guys like, I know you're all fans of them. As I get suggested, I get told to read these things all the time. So if someone is a Patreon supporter and you are on my Discord, please leave suggestions of other ones I can read that are spookus, because I would like to read them for October since it's Halloween month. I want to do something different, but I could also mix it up. I could do some real stories. I could do some spookus spaghettis, mix it up, do one of each maybe each week, or just do creepypasta. If you guys send me some good ones, maybe I'll only do creepypastas, but we'll see. Next week on episode 11, we'll see what happens. I'll be talking to you guys in Discord and on Patreon. So thank you very much for the support. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. You guys are how I stay alive. You are how I exist and how I keep making things. So thank you for the Patreon support. I will mention it again. Please support if you can. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next time on episode 11, the second episode of October's Halloween month. Bye-bye, everyone.